From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Wednesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready back with you this morning from the Clark Ford Studio. Neil, busy man yesterday, went to basketball practice, went to media op for football as well. So we'll discuss that a little bit. And then in about 25 minutes, we're going to talk to the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. I did not expect to say that sentence when I woke up this morning, but here we are. So we'll talk a little wrestling. It was a big night for wrestling fans last night. They had the Ric Flair 30 for 30 on ESPN, that debut. Also, the DiBiase movie Price of Fame was in 700 theaters nationwide last night. So we'll hit on all those subjects with Ted DiBiase here in a little bit on the show. We mentioned Ted Jr. yesterday, but Ted Sr. took our interview request this morning. So we'll talk with him here in a little bit on a podcast that's always brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. 49-cent wings at Oxford Crystal this weekend. Don't ever miss that. As well as at the Exxon, you get the lunch specials. You get the $4.99 lunch specials. You get the barbecue, the ribs at night, and also free gas Friday coming on Friday. Three people, if you follow the Oxford Exxon on Twitter, will get a free tank of gas courtesy of them when you're in town for the game. They'll hook you up with catering as well. A couple slabs of ribs. They can do pounds of pulled pork, and they have quart-sized sides to make everybody happy there at the Oxford Exxon. Also, again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are. Clark Ford is in Amory, 662-257-1900. I talked to Corey last night, and some of you are taking advantage of the great deals from Clark Ford. We appreciate that. Corey probably doesn't want me telling you this, but I'll tell you anyway. It's that time of year. We're getting closer. End of the year, dealers need to move vehicles off the lot for tax purposes. No one likes taxes. Corey hates taxes. So there you go. Take advantage of your opportunity. Call Corey. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He's going to send you a quote. He's going to send you a quote that is motivated to get that new Ford off of his lot. Now, you can get the quote. You're going to get it within 15 minutes. You can shop it around. You can call dealers all over the place. That is your prerogative. Don't let anyone tell you that's not your right. It is. Go for it. Waste your week. It's your week. Or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our family of podcasts, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. At the end of the deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Oxford Exxon podcast, on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm taping one this afternoon with Jay Tate. Or on the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. We taped one of those yesterday. It'll be up sometime today probably. Any of those, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
So, let's see, a couple different things.
We're getting a lot of questions on our message board about a lot of comments about the support for Matt Luke growing, M Club people, stuff like that. I don't really know what to say to that. All the people ask about it. It's not an either or thing the way I speak for Chase when I say this. I know we don't have anything against Matt Luke, but the fact that we're not out campaigning for Matt Luke doesn't mean anything. We're not going to campaign for anyone. I mean, I guess I'd campaign for Chase if he promised to hire me as a coordinator. We could get ourselves some raises. We'd run this program into the damn ground, but we'd run out with the bank account full.
Special teams coordinator, I'd pay you,
I want at least $500,000
to run special teams.
Hell yes. There's a lot of teams. I got a punt team. I got a punt return team. I got a kickoff team, a kickoff return team. I've got a field goal team, a field goal block team. I've got stuff going on. It's not like just running a simple offense or a simple defense.
So you have a lot more teams than like the coordinator would have.
Hell yeah, I got to keep up with a bunch of stuff. A coordinator just goes, all right, so we're gonna run the air raid. So let's raid. Here we go. A defensive coordinator says, we're going to run a 4-3. There's four of you, three of you. What's so complicated? Special teams are special.
Coaches every week say that's what's going to determine the game, isn't it?
Well, you hear them say, hey, we won in all facets of the game. Offense, defense, special teams. So if you're going to pay your coordinators $1.2 million, I take it back. I want $1.2
million. Four times the amount of work.
Damn right.
Yeah. Do you have a finishing thought there before I move on?
Just everyone kind of – you can talk about this amongst yourselves all you'd like. I don't think campaigns are going to be effective with Ross Bjork. I don't think – I think Ross is more pragmatic than that. I think Ross appreciates the job that Matt Luke has done. I think if Ross decides to hire Matt Luke, it will be because Ross thinks Matt Luke's the best coach for the job. I'm going to reiterate something Chase said. He said it 2 days in a row, and he's right. Ross Bjork's job is very, when you boil it down, when I say simple, I don't mean that the execution of it is simple, but defining it is simple. Ross Bjork's job, because he's paid by the University of Mississippi, they write him a check. His job is to go out and to find the very best coach that he can find. It would be stunningly lazy on Ross Bjork's part. Stunningly lazy. And I've never looked at him and thought lazy. Never thought that. It would be stunningly lazy for him to just make an emotional hire. It would be shockingly lazy. To the point of, I can tell you, it ain't happening. He owes it to you, the fans, and to the University of Mississippi, his employer, to try to hit a home run. Now, there might come a point where he's down in the count, a ball and two strikes, and now he's just trying to put the damn ball in play. It might get there, but he's not there yet. I don't think it'll get there. I think he's going to take a healthy hack and probably make contact and drive the ball into a gap somewhere. Maybe it gets out of the park and maybe it doesn't. We won't know those things for a while because, as I've said, there are no sure things. There aren't many people that he can hire where you go, well, that's a sure thing, 100% done. And in his heart of hearts, he would probably admit that to you. Yeah, we'll have a press conference where everyone will do the flowery stuff, but that's press conferences everywhere. But he owes it to you, the fan, to see who is available and then go from there. The people clamoring for some emotional thing, you're just letting your emotions get the best of you.
Coaching searches everywhere are emotional creatures and volatile to the fan, especially ones that take months where it is this slow burn and we're still not in the traditional coaching search frenzy that's going to happen at some point. We're not there yet. So,
no, we're probably
a week away.
A week away, yeah. It's probably about right.
Something like that.
That video got out, and that video is of a guy who loves Ole Miss. It's of a guy who wants this job and wants it bad. I'd love to know who filmed it. I'd love to know why they chose Yancey Porter as the outlet.
Oh, and it was before Arkansas.
It was the night before the Arkansas game. It's not a knock on Matt.
No, again, he used a tool in his toolbox effectively. Okay.
Yes, with his team.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The speech to the team, I don't have a problem with any of it, by the way. That's not the part that I find interesting. They had a game the next morning in Oxford against Arkansas. A game that Matt Luke wanted bad. You saw that after the game when he lost the game. He wanted that game bad. Matt knew, I'm guessing, he hasn't said this, but I'm a decently intelligent person. Matt knew if they could beat Arkansas, they could beat Kentucky. They could beat Lafayette. And he probably is smart enough to know that by the time A&M gets here, a flawed A&M team might not give a damn. And that would give him a ton of momentum going into the final game against Mississippi State. And it would give him a better chance at the job. That's one of the reasons that the loss to Arkansas was so crushing. But that speech gets out. Someone gave that speech to Yancey Porter. who posted it on the internet, on Twitter, and it has engendered an emotional reaction among people who like Matt, love Ole Miss, and all of that. At the risk of sounding like an ass, loving Ole Miss is not a job requirement for being the head coach. It's not a negative. I'm not saying it's a negative. But if you're Ross Bjork, that can't be part of your equation. Because there's a whole bunch of people who love schools who aren't capable of coaching those schools. You need to go out again and find the right guy. That's what you're paying Ross Bjork to do. If you're just going to hire the first guy who loves Ole Miss a ton, you don't need a $500,000 athletic director.
Yeah, all good.
Kind of the end of my thought on that. It just, everyone's making this more than it is. The season ends in 15 days.
Yeah.
Ole Miss has been nothing but good to Matt Luke, and Matt Luke has been nothing but good to Ole Miss, but their deal expires in 15 days, and then they go from there. This rush to let's do this is an emotional thing. And the emotion, you have to ask yourself, when the emotion wears off, is that the right move? And if the answer is yes, well, then it's the right move. But if the answer is, well, I don't know, I'm not sure, because right now I'm wrapped up in a season and I'm emotional. Well, in March, you won't be wrapped up in the season and it won't be emotional. And if at that point you have buyer's regret, well, you made a mistake. And that's where you're paying Ross Bjork to make this decision. Let him make it. His legacy rides on this too.
It's his first major coaching hire.
And if it's a bad one, it'll be his last major coaching hire at Ole Miss.
Yeah, probably.
So he knows that. I'm not saying anything he doesn't know. He might not like it put in exactly those terms, but he's, again, we've been around Ross Bjork a number of times. Intelligent, pragmatic, thoughtful, thorough, detail-oriented, all of those things. So let him do that thing.
Yeah. Quick update. It was not a cotton mouth in the yard of the neighbor, by the way. It was some sort of non-venomous snake. However, still a snake. So.
I didn't hear a word you just said.
Well, it was, given the two possibilities, not cotton mouth is better than cotton mouth.
Are you speaking English right now? What are we doing? Are we doing the Portuguese section of the podcast?
It was a cobra.
They're
right?
All. Thank you. Now you're speaking English again.
It was a cobra.
They're all cobras.
Yeah, I spoke with my neighbor a couple days ago. They are putting mothballs out in an effort to run snakes off, and that's where we are. Because
your neighbor's bad.
Why?
If your neighbor was truly a neighbor, he would go ahead and sacrifice his financial future and burn down his home. And if
there was... The scariest part is when I first heard the story, I heard it was just on the back patio. It actually was inside the house right there next to the...
They had a cobra inside their house.
Well, I mean, in your terms, yes. So. We all made the agreement nobody was really hanging out outside for a day or so before we figured out this issue. So.
Mm.
Yeah. Not a cotton mouth, some sort of, I don't know, diamond something something's what they thought it. Not a rattler, no, stop. It's probably a chicken snake, honestly. Or
diamondback cobra.
Diamondback cobra. So Ole Miss basketball starts Friday night against Louisiana Lafayette.
The women play at 5, the men play at approximately 7-ish. 7-ish. Yeah, come on. Tip-off probably will not be at 7.
7:19 or something.
That would be a better guess.
Who the women play?
I'm not sure. I'll have to look it up in a minute.
Good job.
Thanks.
Yeah, I did see they had 3 straight top 25 recruiting classes, including number 11 this past year.
The women?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's recruited well.
I did see that. So what did you learn yesterday? You talked to somebody at basketball.
I talked to Brian Tyree.
Okay.
Talked to DeAndre Burnett. And we talked to Andy Kennedy. I will have that to you realistically tomorrow. I'll put it in a big season preview, sort of a packaging thingy.
Are you?
It's the plan.
Okay.
I'm not going to just throw a bunch of videos at you. I'm going to try to put something together that makes some form of sense. You know, start of the season, rotation's going to, he's going to start to pare that down a little bit. This is a good Southwestern Louisiana team. They returned 7 of their 8 top players from a year ago. They have a couple of grad transfers. They're picked in the top half of the Sun Belt. It'll be a test. And talked about Markel Crawford. They issued a very brief statement, and I've asked.
They issued the perfect statement. Say nothing.
Yeah, Adam Kupfner's good.
They issued the perfect statement.
Perfect statement, and then I asked a question.
I bet a lot of people wish they'd issued some semblance of that statement 2 years ago in another sport.
How you doing, Hugh? Come on, that was – that statement. Whoa.
It was not good the day of, and it's gotten much worse as time has gone on.
And I can say that because I was driving back from the beach when you read me that statement, and I went, oh, my God, they said he beat his wife.
Yeah.
Someone goes, well, he did beat his wife. That's not the point.
We are looking into the matter. Done.
Do you have anything to hide? Think closely. Do you have anything to hide? You do? Yeah, okay. Don't call him a wife beater. Whew. Wouldn't you love to know the true story behind that?
The whole meeting and everything?
The 30 for 30 Matt? Yeah. What if I told you? Anyway, I asked a follow-up question of Andy anyway. I prefaced it with, I understand if you don't want to answer this.
You're not going to, but.
And at which point I'm sure Kupfner's looking at me like, come on. No, he's a good dude. You've worked with him. This is my first time to work with him. I'm impressed with him. And Andy just said, hey, as of right now, we're preparing as if he's going to play. We're in the process of separating fact from fiction.
What do you do about this, though, if there's really no proof?
Well, you have a little bit of a break if you're Ole Miss because the allegation did not occur under your watch.
Yeah, you're secondary to this.
And so they've turned it into compliance.
Yeah, there's no institutional research whatsoever.
No, I mean, from an institution, they don't have to worry about anything. I don't even think if they played him and then he were ruled ineligible, I don't even think you'd have to go back and...
I got you.
Because no one has told you not to play him. Now, if you told me that compliance came down on Friday and said, hey, he doesn't need to play while we dig into this, I wouldn't be shocked. And if that's the case, Godspeed, message board. Godspeed.
Yeah.
But as of now, I mean, I said, what do you have to change the way you prepare based on what was written and said today? And to his credit, he said he didn't seem upset by the question, but he said, no, you know, I mean, as of right now, we're going to play him and we're going to prepare for him to play. I'm not changing anything in practice and we're going to go forward. We're still in the separating fact from fiction, and I don't really know that that's Ole Miss's job.
Small-time problem, considering what else is going on. I mean, UCLA's got players in a Chinese prison right now.
Bigger deal.
And yeah. Chuck Person was federally indicted by a grand jury yesterday. So,
well,
a little more going on around the country.
Talked to a basketball person yesterday who said that the rumor in the coaching fraternity, basketball fraternity, is that indictments are coming. Potentially this week. If you listen to the Beer Garden last week with Matt Norlander, there's a belief, and look, people go, well, that's not right. Well, the feds want wins too. Everybody likes winning. There's rumors that the feds are going to make a big splash in March when college basketball has its spotlight month. I mean, let's face it. College basketball owns 1 month on the calendar. One. And only one. But it owns that one. If I say to you sports March, you say college basketball.
I mean,
generally, everybody has a bracket. People are talking about college basketball. You have the Thursday and Friday of the tournament whenever.
SEC baseball, SEC play is starting, but I mean, okay.
But you understand my point. Yeah, nationally, people would say if you said sports in March, they'd say college basketball.
Yeah.
It doesn't own February.
No.
It doesn't own January. The NFL owns January. College basketball is kind of a big deal in March. And if you're the feds and you want the big splash, March.
Good move by LaVar Ball. Actually shut up last night. Did not give the press conference from his Shanghai hotel room as previously scheduled. He did, however, say at some point it's not a big deal. Figure it out. Diplomacy over there is difficult, however. So,
you know, if you were in Japan or like South Korea,
you go, ah.
I'm kind of with you, LaVar, but you're in China, bud. You might want
to
Google.
On the list of foreign countries to get something like this to have happened, this
there's
is
only
not,
one that I can think of right off the top that I go, well, that's worse.
North Korea?
Yes.
We would have a severe problem if it was North Korea.
Mr. Ball probably should Google Chinese law.
I did give Pat Forty credit last night. I think it was Pat that wrote this. Might have been Dan Wetzel. It was one or the other. he said, thus Tuesday was supposed to be topped off with a LaVar Ball press conference in Shanghai to address the situation, but the show was canceled before it started. Undoubtedly because somebody told Big Baller to shut his big mouth before he causes an international incident that further jeopardizes his son and teammates. LaVar is not exactly Henry Kissinger. He might not even be Dennis Rodman when it comes to Asian diplomacy. So, pretty good there.
Hoover. That is good.
Yeah. All right. One from the Big Baller to the Million Dollar Man here in a second on the podcast for we do that. I will tell you that the podcast is brought to you by Community Mortgage. It is located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also, the float-down options allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704. Or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
The podcast is also brought to you by Vitamend. It's at 3010 Old Taylor Road in front of the Faulkner Flats Apartments in Oxford. It is the same IVs and shots as before, but there's a lot more now. They've got the cryosauna, which is great for removing inflammation, toxins, speeds up recovery, burns calories, speeds up your metabolism, so much more. The entire process is about 2 minutes, and the effects are awesome. You'll really enjoy it. Try the infrared sauna. They have combo packages, the overserve treatment. Try the smoothie bar. It's all natural foods, no added sugar, locally sourced. 662-638-3600. info@vitamend.com. And everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. But what if I told you State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, Romero challenges you to give him a shot at your property. If you do, you won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give him a call, go to Google. Read Romero Miller State Farm reviews. Romero Miller State Farm, 662-893-1212. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, or more, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today.
Now, Ted DiBiase on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Really appreciate your time this morning. I want to talk about your film that came out this week. Last night, a big night for wrestling fans. You had your show in 700 theaters, give or take, around the country. Also, the Ric Flair 30 for 30 was last night. You entertained Neil and me this morning. I'd pulled up on the internet 1985-ish, you and Flair with Dick Murdoch on the internet this morning. Any recollection of what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah. Cowboy Bill Watts was the promoter, and I had been in our business a heel for a long time, a bad guy, and Bill Watts was just he was a brilliant. I mean, he turned me back good guy in one night, and the deal was it was supposedly that Ric Flair, the world champion, was there, that I had won the opportunity to wrestle the world champion. And so I'm in the ring, and before Flair is introduced, and Murdoch comes out there, and Murdoch and I had history. All the fans in the entire area knew that I was like his protege when I first started. And he came out and gave me some grief about, kid, you need to step aside and let me have this match. And when I wouldn't do it, he hits me and out on the floor and runs me into the ring post. And of course, back then, that's when we juiced, is what we called it. And we would get blood. Now everybody would say, oh, that wrestling blood is capsules and it's not real. No, it's real blood. And it was because we would cut ourselves with small razor blades, that we carried, like taped to our finger. And, I had to hit it really quick, and because of the camera being right there, and I hit it really quick, all right, but I hit an artery.
Oh my God!
Every time my heart would beat, this blood would just go squirting out of the top of my head.
See, we watched that, Ted, and we were talking before we started. We were watching and I grew up in Ruston, Louisiana, so that was my wheelhouse, and I was 15 at the time, and I was locked in. But that look, I would have thought for sure that was blood packets. That's unbelievable.
No, there was never any such thing as a blood packet in pro wrestling. It was we'd take a razor blade and just the tip of the blade, and we would tape it. And so you're not, no matter how hard you hit yourself, it's not going to go in deep enough to do any real damage. It's just that when I did it, I did it so quick, and where I did it, it happened to hit this artery. And so, the whole idea was that where they were going to take me back to the dressing room, we call it doing the Spirit of 76, where, they tape up the top of your head, and, you come out there all bandaged up, but you're still going to go. Well, that's what we did, except that when they taped my head, they really had to tape my head. And then while I'm having the match with Flair, it comes off. this might sound crude to you, but it's like I'm going, okay, Rick, take me over here so I can get these girls on the front row with the blood, right? And I remember the match very well because it's like when I went in the ring, I was everybody hated me, and by the time the evening was over, I was a hero again.
That is awesome. I got to ask you about Flair because he's certainly in the news today, and after the 30 for 30, I didn't get a chance to watch it last night, but I DVR'd it. What made him so great with fans? What made him so great with other wrestlers? What was it about him that separated him?
Well, he was just, very, very flamboyant, but I learned a lot about Rick I didn't know last night because I did watch the 30-30, and I knew that he had been adopted, that his father was a physician. But I learned a lot more about, I think, some of the things that caused Ric Flair to be Ric Flair, that I guess there wasn't a lot of, love. There wasn't, he didn't have a, he didn't have a dad that was there that backed him up, that came to see him play and all those other things. And I think that because Rick has always had the need to be the center of attention. It's like that. It's part of who he is, and I watched it last night and I love Rick. But I mean, at the end of the show, it was depressing because, although he's been through a lot, it was more like, for him to say, on television, and they asked him, well, how many women do you think that you've actually been with? And he said, 10,000. I mean, it's physically impossible. I mean, unless, you know, if you do the math, it's just a stupid statement. But I mean, I was like, golly, how could you say that? You know, I mean, you know, like, I don't know. It's just kind of, it's almost like Rick is still looking for something, for some kind of attention. I don't know. It was just kind of sad.
You were a superstar in that same era. So you went through the same travel travails, I'm guessing, Ted. I mean, you had the same demands on your time, on your body. How did you balance that with family life, with being a dad, with all of those things? I mean, just the rigors of being a star in that sport and trying to have some semblance of a life in reality.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, my movie, my documentary that was out last night across the country, The Price of Fame, and The Price of Fame can be high, and that's in it, because people see the glamour. They see you're out there in front of 20,000 people who all know your name, and they're shouting and screaming and hollering. But what they don't see is when you have to go back to the empty hotel room in a town that you're not familiar with, and four walls of the TV, and then you do it night after night after night, and that's the thing that eventually draws you down to the bar and all that, and I shared all that, and I got caught up in that same thing. And I understood a lot of what Rick was saying about the why, but it's like at some point, we all have to grow up, and for me, when I was confronted by my wife with adultery, and I said, I don't want to talk about it on the phone. I'll be on the next plane home. And she said, no, you won't. You don't live here anymore. And click. And what hit me in the face was the realization that for the sake of stroking my ego and filling this void on the road, I had put at risk the most valuable possessions of my life, the love and commitment of a devoted wife, not to mention the future, the stability and the well-being of my children. And that rocked me really hard. I mean, not to mention the fact that I looked at the difference, because it pointed out last night that Rick didn't really have a close relationship with his dad. And it was almost like that he was always seeking that approval and he never got it. But I had that. And that's the difference. I had this wonderful stepfather who happened to be a professional wrestler and a storied career out of the University of Nebraska. I mean, my dad lettered 8 times at Nebraska, 4 in wrestling, 4 in football, 3 years consecutive conference heavyweight wrestling champion, just all that stuff. And I wanted to be like him. But the qualities that he instilled in me as a young man were priceless, and I wanted to be like him. And all of that was well, and all of that went good for me. I came out of Wilcox, Arizona after he died unexpectedly, heart attack, while he was wrestling. I moved to Wilcox, Arizona, 3 traffic lights. and I got a scholarship to play football out of there. I signed with Arizona, but eventually I went to West Texas State, largely due to the influence of the Funk family, there's a lot of pro wrestlers that came out of that school. And I got to college. I'm playing football on scholarship, and then I go into wrestling, and I eventually to the WWF, and I'm a star. And all that's good, but I got caught up in that same thing out there, the being gone, the constantly on the road now. And again, I'm not making excuses. There aren't excuses. If you build safeguards into your life, you can avoid this stuff. And I didn't do that. I got caught up in it. And it was always on an ego trip. But what happened to me when I realized that how badly I had hurt my wife and what I had put at risk, it was devastating to me. What a jerk. What a total jerk I had been, and now I'm on the top of the world, you know, in the eyes of the world and the fans and everything, I'm one of the best wrestlers. You know, I'm in the one of the top five guys. You know, I've wrestled. I can't tell you how many times I wrestled Ric Flair, but it didn't mean anything in that moment because I had no character. You know, no integrity, and I was totally being a selfish jerk. And that was the point in time. That was the turnaround for me. That's what turned me around. And I went back to the values I was raised on, and basically back to my Christian faith. You know, and I've done a lot of interviews about the movie, and I said, even if you're not a believer, even if you don't believe in God, I think and I would hope that you could have watched my story and walked away from there realizing that all that glitters isn't gold, that no matter how much money you make and what kind of prestige you have and what kind of awards you get, at the end of the day, those things, they'll tantalize you for a little while, but they're not going to give you peace in life. They're not going to, you know, it's like, why do you continue to do those things? It's like, you continue to do those things because you're guilty. And, you know, once I was set free, once I confessed all of these things to my wife, and I really believed that she would leave. I mean, you know, because of her faith at the time, and if my wife's faith hadn't been so strong at the time, I don't think I would be married today. And she even says that. She says, you know, if I could have easily gone to the world, as she says it, and got the answers I wanted, you know, divorce the bum, take everything he's got. But I went to my Christian friends who counseled me, you know, Jesus said, forgive as you've been forgiven. Now, she could have forgiven me, and she still could have walked. But she determined that she was going to try to stay. And it was not really so much for my sake, but because of her belief in and her trust in God and our children. And today we're happier than we've ever been. But I had to make a change. I had to do an about face, and I did that. And I just see that. I don't know. You watch it. You watch the 30-30, and when it was over, I looked at my wife and I said, "How depressing!" Because it just kind of left it there, like, okay, this is who Rick is. But you know, has he changed, or is he still that guy just needing that attention?
I'm curious, and we're jumping around a little, so forgive me. This isn't probably not the best interview I've ever conducted, but your story is so fascinating, and I know your son a little bit. And for a little while, he was a star in wrestling, and he walked away from it. I'm curious, when he walked away from it, were you relieved? Were you pleased?
Oh, yeah. I was pleased. I was very pleased. I never wanted him to be a wrestler anyway. And you know, he graduated from Mississippi College, and then he told me he wanted to be a wrestler, and I went, what? I said, you know, why have I never heard this before? And of course, he looks at me and he goes, because my whole life I've been told the one thing I would never be is a wrestler. And he said, but Dad, you're my hero. I've always wanted to be like you. And I said, but you've heard my story. You know that your mom and I went through something. And that was nothing that was ever really spoken of. They knew it, but they knew when they saw us that we were in love and we were okay. So they never asked the questions. Actually, the questions didn't actually come until the documentary. But Teddy was like, here's what I realized. If I don't let him go and try this, then he's going to wonder the rest of his life, number one, could I have done this? And maybe that would have driven a wedge in my relationship with him. And I didn't want to do that. So I said, okay. Things in the WWE in terms of accountability are a lot better now. State-of-the-art drug testing policy. There's a lot of things in place that will help them, and not to mention the fact that they're not constantly on the road like we were. But still, all those dangers are still there. And when Ted's contract, when his first fight, he had a five-year contract, when that contract came due and they were about to re-sign him or wanted to re-sign him, he called me and he said, Dad, he said, the first thing is I don't want to hear those words. And I said, what words? I told you so. And I said, okay, I won't say those words. What's up? He said, well, my contract's up, and I just wanted you to know I'm not going to sign back up. And I said, okay, why? And he said, well, you're right. You know, I'm doing really good. I could do really good. He said, but to be a star in that business, even though you actually only wrestle 4 days a week, if you're a star, he says, because I watch John Cena. If you're a star, you're a flag bearer for the company. So those other days, those other off days, a lot of them, you're going to be doing things for the company. And basically he said, you know, you're married to the job. And he said, that's not fair to my wife or my child. And so I just wanted you to know, I'm not going to sign back up.
Let's take a break from our awesome interview with Ted DiBiase to tell you the podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com. They've got the Sildenafil. It is the alternative to that little blue pill that's cheaper but have the same length of effectiveness. Get you ready as little as 15 minutes. You can fill out the form there online at TysonDrugs.com or you can give them a call at 662-252-2321 and give them your doctor's name. They'll get the prescription ready and even deliver it to you if you're not local. So again, TysonDrugs.com, 662-252-2321.
The podcast is also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Gambrell & Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846, or Shane, 662-832-8749. Now back to Ted DiBiase on the Oxford Exxon podcast. So you didn't say, I told you so, but you thought, thank God.
Yeah. And I said, well, I won't say those words. And, I was very proud of him. And even after that, I think Teddy went through a bit of an identity crisis there for a little while. Like, okay, now what am I going to do? But he's, you know, he's doing really well now, you know, vice president of development for insurance company, One Life, and working with me now doing leadership training for the state of Mississippi. And it's, you know, he's hit the ground running. And this, the documentary, you know, when I was first approached by the gentleman who put this whole thing together, and the guy's name is Pete Fierro, and Teddy was like, kind of like, and I told Teddy, I said, this guy wants to do a documentary about my story. And he's heard me talk about Wilcox, the little town with the three traffic lights, and he wants to go see it. And he says, well, I want to go too, Dad. Well, Teddy told me later, he says, Dad, he says, I was going with you. He says, I wasn't sure about Pete. He says, I was going to make sure this guy, some guy wasn't trying to take advantage of my dad. He says, I didn't know whether I was going to like him or beat him up. So Teddy came along and saw Wilcox and went, oh my gosh, this is where you came from? I said, yeah. We saw the whole town in 10 minutes. I said, not much to do here. He said, exactly. And so, but then through his connections, he'd made a movie. He had helped other people with movie projects. We get this documentary completed and he sends it to the people who marketed God's Not Dead, God's Not Dead 2, some major faith-based movies. And they told us a year ago, they said, we'll get back to you after Christmas. And the next day, Ted called me and he said, Dad, they called me back today. I sent it to him yesterday and they said, we want to help you get this out. This is great. So wow. I have to give all the credit to The Price of Fame becoming a Fathom event to Junior. And, he's, and by the way, today's his birthday. He's 35 years old today. So happy birthday, son, if you're listening.
Just curious, you mentioned how much better it was in a lot of ways today. What were the most days in a year that you were on the road at your peak? And then, you know, so many health problems from guys. I mean, what allowed you to be in relatively good health compared to so many other guys? Or kind of what was the environment that has caused so much of that?
Well, I mean, you're basically on the road. I would say, you know, there's 365 days in a year, and I would say 300 of those days I was gone, or I was wrestling. In the pre-WWF days, in what they called regional wrestling, we really didn't have days off. If you wanted a day off, you had to ask for a day off. But when I wrestled in Mid-South, there were certain days of the week that were, you know, like every Wednesday night, for example. Wednesday night was Jackson. We'd wrestle in Jackson every Wednesday night. So it's kind of like your favorite TV show. You know, wrestling's coming to town every Wednesday. If you're a fan, you're going to wrestling Wednesday night. You know, and then and from here we would go down. We'd go back down to Baton Rouge, and, you know, New Orleans was on Thursday night. And, you know, Shreveport was on Tuesday night. These are things I remember. But it was every night. Your day off was like, you know, when you happen to be wrestling in the town where you had an apartment. that's your day off. And that's the way it was. It was, you know, brutal. But you know, when I went to work for Vince, initially I was on the road 3 weeks out of every month, 21 days, 21 cities. I'd go home for a week. Now, one of those days, half of the first day off, I'm getting home, and then half of the last day off, I'm going back to work. And so you're not really off even a whole week. But then they changed that to 10 days on. And then you go home for three, and then you go back for 4 days, a short run, and then go back home for three. That way you're not gone for like three total weeks. And, but today it's like four days a week, you know, like Friday through Monday, and you go home 3 days and you do it again. So that's a little better, but it's still, and you know, in wrestling, it's, you know, it's like I can, you know, football, you condition your body to what you're putting it through. The basic bumps that we take, for example, the basic bump we take is from our feet to our back. And I probably do that 20 times a night, conservatively. And, so, you know, years later, all of a sudden I take that bump one night and this pain shoots down both my shoulders. And I'm like, what in the world is that? And it kept happening. So I go to the doctor, and I've herniated two discs in my neck, at the base of, you know, like right across my shoulder blades. And that's what the doctor said. He says, that's where you absorb most of that blow when you take that bump. And he said, Ted, you've been doing this for 19 years. And he said, it's degenerative. He says, you've worn those discs out. And so now we have to replace them. And it was kind of the same thing with my knees. You know, I never had a major knee injury in football, in high school or college. But, you know, night after night after night, the pounding. And so, you know, I wore both of my knees out. I had both my knees replaced about 5 years ago. So, you know, that's, you know, and but it's like the old saying, the show must go on. You know, you're a top guy, you're a star, and you're hurt. And unless it's something really severe, where you can't walk and it's so obvious that you can't. Otherwise, you tape it up and you go, because everybody else is dependent on you. You know, if you're the main event guy, you know, and you don't go out there, then that's going to hurt the next time you come back to that town, because if the main event doesn't show up, people aren't going to come back. And so you learn to work hurt. It's a tough grind. I've gone to the ring when I was sick with the flu. You know, it's like I'm in the bathroom, you know, hurling, and then I run out there and I have a match, short as it might be. And I mean, I've even had to roll under the ring. That sounds horrible, and puke, and then roll back and get back in the ring and finish match. I mean, you know, it's hard.
It's
not an easy life at all.
When you see so many of the guys that you were contemporaries with, their lives end far too early. I'm just curious what is the emotion you feel, because you knew those people well, and they just didn't fare. They didn't move on post wrestling, obviously, as well as you did.
Well, and that's it. It's like, it's kind of like the nature of the beast, but it's, again, you know, when I say the price of fame, I also say, now it's not the WWE, and it's not the NFL, and it's not the NBA, and it's what you do. Yes, you know, it's the price is going to be whatever you make it, and basically that comes down to personal choice. And I, you know, I'm a minister. I speak to a lot of men all the time, and I tell guys all the time, there's no shame in failing, because we all fail. We all blow it in some way at some time. I said, the shame is in not getting back up. The shame is to stay down and wallow in it, or not learn the lesson that should be learned from it. Because, you know, why would you think that if you continue to make the same choices, you're going to get a different result? And so a lot of that, quite frankly, you know, as sad as it is, it's at some point you've got to make the choice to change. And I guess, you know, as I watched that 30-30 on Rick last night, you know, and I love Rick to death. I had so many great matches with him, and he was one of the best ever. But it's almost like at the end of it, it's like, okay, where's the redemption, Rick? Because, you know, it's like, you know, I never got the feeling of maybe tremendous remorse, or it's just the way it is. I, you know, I'm not sure. And I, you know, I would hate to misjudge Rick, but I just didn't feel it. And unfortunately, that's, you know, that's what happens to so many guys. There's a lot of guys, you know, and, you know, I easily, you know, at one time at the height of my fame, I, you know, could have been one of those guys. I mean, no addiction to any. I never got addicted to booze or pills or any of that stuff, but I certainly did my share of it. And oftentimes it's, you know, you take it to keep going. You know, you take the speed pills to keep you going, because you got to keep going. And then my gosh, you're all ramped up, and well, I got to take something that's going to put me to sleep. And it's easy. It's very easy. I can see where you can allow those things to take over in your life if you're not careful. And some guys beat it and some guys don't.
Just kind of curious, we're, as Neil said, bouncing all around, but how did the persona or the character of the Million Dollar Man come about? How did that kind of get chosen for you? How does that work? How did that come about?
The idea was actually Vince McMahon's personal idea. Basically, when I went to meet with him, and while he was out of the room on a phone call for a moment, Pat Patterson, who was his right-hand man at the time, and another guy who's got a tremendous knowledge of the psychology of wrestling, he looked at me and said, "Ted, here's all you need to know. If Vince were going to be a character in his own show, this is who he would be." And he said, "So know this, he's going all out to get this character over, and he thinks you're the guy with the stuff to do it." And that's how I was chosen. And Bruce Pritchard tells this story in the film, that they were on an airplane, and they said they had gone to a meeting somewhere, and they were going back, and this is back when you could still smoke on a plane, and like he said, first class was only like two rows, and the first row is non-smoking, and the second row is smoking, and there's a guy sitting behind Vince, and he's smoking, and Vince hates smoke. And he said, he looked at Bruce, and he said, "I'm going to prove to you the Million Dollar Man is a real deal thing." And he said to the guy in the back, says, "Sir, I'm kind of allergic to smoke. Would you mind putting your cigarette out?" Well, and the guy said, "Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, I paid for my seat, and I can smoke, so I'm such a sorry." And so Vince, you know, offers him $100, and the guy says, "I'm sorry. Look, I bought my ticket. You know, I'm sorry if you can't deal with the smoke, but I'm smoking." And so anyway, he offers him another $100, and not interested. And then he offers him $500, and the guy goes, "Okay." I won't smoke. And Vince looked at Bruce and said, you see, everybody's got a price. And I didn't, you know, it's funny because I had forgotten that story. I mean, he told it to me years ago, but I had forgotten. I had forgotten until I saw it on the film myself. So Vince, I was like Vince's alter ego. And if you watch the show enough, you know, and I don't know, I haven't watched a lot lately, but when Vince started introducing himself into the show later, after I had left, well, basically he did become the character, you know, like, you know, he was the evil CEO with all the money.
When you look back on your career, who are the couple of guys that you most enjoyed wrestling, and who were the couple of guys that when you got in the ring with them, if you weren't at the top of your game, it was not pleasant?
Well, in my early career, guys that really helped me develop, Dick Murdoch was a phenomenal wrestler. I mean, both of the Funks, you know, Terry Funk and Dory Funk Jr., they're more like family than just friends, because their dad and my dad had such a great relationship. Harley Race is another guy who was very instrumental in my early years. But as far as my peers, I loved working with Jake the Snake. Jake and I, you know, we were on a level playing field. I mean, I would say we're both equally, you know, thought of in terms of our ability and capability, and we had a lot of fun together. And it was like, you know, we call it doing the dance, and we danced well together. WrestleMania 6, I had a match with Jake, and it was just a joy to work with him. I loved working with Bret Hart. You know, Bret's another guy who came from the same school of psychology, and we never had the opportunity to have what we call a program where we were in a series of matches for over a couple of months' time. But we did have some really good wrestling matches. I loved working with Hogan. And everybody says, well, you know, Hogan really wasn't a great wrestler. I said, Hulk Hogan worked his gimmick. And I said, he knew his gimmick, and he did exactly the things that the guy, you know, when you're Hulk Hogan and you're, you know, 6'6" and you weigh 300 pounds and you're built like, you know, a god, you don't throw drop kicks. You don't have to. And anyway, so, and I love working with him too, because I made a lot of money working with him. But guys that I didn't care to, number one would be the Ultimate Warrior. You know, Jim Hellwig had a great body. He had a great look. He had all kinds of energy, but he only knew how to do about three things in a ring. And if you didn't lead him, and when I say lead him, I mean lead him step by step. It was horrible. So that made my job very difficult, working with him. The other guy, God bless him, you know, he wasn't a bad guy, but he just wasn't very bright. And if he'd have had any real wrestling talent, I could have had a tremendous run with him. And that would be the guy who everybody knew as Virgil, because there came the point in the thing where Virgil finally gets tired of my crap too. And he turns on me. And what could have been a very long, you know, program ended up being a very short program because, you know, Virgil's just not a real bright guy. Nicest way I can say it.
What's kind of the plan moving here with the documentary, with the film? Do we know anything about, you know, potential streaming devices or anything beyond?
It's going to be available digitally. It's going to be available on iTunes. It's going to go to DVD. Don't quote me just yet, but I'm thinking that, you know, it'll be available definitely in Walmart. And there is even some talk that down the road, you know, it'll be available on Netflix. So it's going to be available. And, you know, just the initial feedback, we don't have any real numbers yet, but just the initial feedback that I'm getting is just very, very, very positive. I mean, you know, we're excited. I mean, here in Jackson, You know, first they advertised it as sold out, and then because they had filled one theater, they said, well, okay, we're going to move it to a bigger auditorium at the Malco Cineplex, and so they moved it to the bigger, more seating. Plus, they're showing it again tonight. And I was there last night greeting people as they came in to thank them for coming. And, of course, you know, a lot of friends and folks from different churches in the area. And I wouldn't say that it was sold out last night, but it was a full auditorium. And, again, it's available in Jackson tonight at Malco one more time. So if you haven't, then please go see The Price of Fame at 7 o'clock this evening.
Absolutely. Maybe we can get, you know, maybe your son and Ben Craddock in the ring together. You and Neil can be the celebrity managers, and we can make this happen.
Yeah. I'd love to do that. Yeah.
You know, you could go from teaming with...
Hey, Big Ben, you can carry my bag anytime, pal.
You could go from teaming with Andre the Giant to teaming with me. What's, no fall off there. What was that? Last thing I'm curious, because I'm just fascinated by it, then I'll let you go. I'm sorry, but... I'm curious, what was it like teaming with Andre the Giant?
Oh, my gosh.
That had to be like traveling with an absolute rock star, right?
Andre the Giant, well, I mean, it's like, where do you hide? I mean, you know, you're a celebrity, and then, you know, like, there, you know, guys like me, I mean, I'm not small, but, you know, I could probably put on a hoodie or something and, you know, and sneak through with and not – but where's Andre the Giant going to go where he's not noticed? Nowhere. Nowhere. And but a prince of a guy. A prince of a guy. But, I mean, I have to tell my favorite Andre story. It's in the book.
Please.
Now, here's a guy that's 7'4", 450 pounds. He's always looking for comfort, somewhere to sit where he can be comfortable. I mean, you know, it's like he can, you know, obviously he had to sit in first class because you couldn't get him in a coach seat. And even sitting in first class, it's kind of like me. I mean, I can sit in economy comfort, but I'm not that comfortable there because I'm a big guy. That's much, much better in that first class seat if I can get it. And so that was Andre's life. And so now we have to go to Japan. It's a 14-hour flight. And then it's another hour on a bus into Tokyo to our hotel. And, of course, the first night we always try to stay up as late as possible because of the time difference. Because if you go right to bed, you're going to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then at 2 o'clock in the afternoon you're going to be falling asleep. So everybody freshens up, and the thing was we're all going to meet in the lobby of the hotel, and we're going to go someplace nice to eat, you know, and stay up for a while. So I hit the button on the elevator, the door opens, and there's Andre. It's just Andre. Hey, boss. Let's call everybody boss. So we start down, and this elevator stops on almost every floor, and people keep getting on. Now, guys, what you and I would say, okay, this elevator's full, wait for the next one. Not in Tokyo. I mean, the whole country's the size of California, and the population is half that of our country. And so they're stacking them up there. They pay people to push people onto the trains in Tokyo Station to make sure they leave full. And so these people keep getting on this elevator, and the big man's been on the 14-hour flight, and he's not real, you know, he's a little grumpy. So he reaches down, and he just kind of taps me on the shoulder, and I looked up at him, and he winks at me. I said, okay. Well, guys, there's no nice way to say this. The next thing I heard was the loudest, longest fart that I have ever heard in my life. And I mean, I know you're Andre the Giant, but how could anybody possibly have this much air in their body? And I'm staring straight ahead, I'm biting the hole through my lip, but all I could picture is the poor little Japanese guy standing directly behind him going, oh my gosh, this poor soul. But I want you to know something. The next time that elevator door opened, it was like the Exodus, guys. They were falling over each other trying to get out the door. And all I could hear was the giant going, oh, 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 big, deep laugh. And the elevator door shuts, and it's just him and me. And he looks at me, and he goes, they won't crowd the giant anymore, will they? You had to be there to really appreciate it, but I think you get the picture.
That's
Andre.
Great. That's a great story. Thanks so much for your time this morning. Again, congratulations on the film, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. God bless.
God bless you. Thanks.
Thanks so much to Ted for joining us today. Just outstanding stuff there, from stories to his story to much more. Again, Price of Fame, back another night, and as well as DVD and different things in the future there. So definitely support him and that great cause, good film there with a great message. Podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. And the fall is finally arriving. Did you know November is a good time to plant a new flower bed or trees? The fall will allow the root system to establish before the ground freezes, and also the plants to avoid the hot, dry summer, even though it's still a little warm outside. As you know, leaves will start filling your yard very soon. Neil's very aware. So don't be the eyesore of your neighborhood and contact MasterCuts to get your leaves removed regularly throughout the fall. Also, if you wait till all the leaves are on the ground, you end up paying more to get that done at once. So you might as well pay less and have your yard looking good throughout the fall. MasterCuts can help you with there. And remember, you can get a free quote about fence, stone patios, decks, arbors, and any outdoor living area. Also, get a free quote when you mention the podcast. A free yard cutting when you mention the podcast and sign an annual contract. 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com.
I don't even know that I want to continue after that insult. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan, located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. They have great lease deals. I've bought from Grenada Nissan several times. No regrets. It's been a great experience every single time. Great service after the sale. If you're in the market for a Nissan, you owe it to yourself to check out Grenada Nissan. GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. Harry's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his site, HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for. If you're coming up this weekend and you're kind of thinking about it, you're on the fence, Ole Miss and Southwestern Louisiana play at 11 a.m. You could probably get Harry to give you a little post-game tour, a little information on a condo. Believe it or not, now is a great time to buy a condo in Oxford. Don't take my word for it. Take Harry's. It's H-A at HarryAlexander.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
So, not real sure where to go from there. That was awesome. As we
kind of hard to follow that up.
Yeah, I have no Andre the Giant elevator stories. I have no experience with Vince McMahon, so we have to move on. So there, really appreciate it. Again, we'll talk to him again soon. Real good stuff there. On multiple fronts. Tomorrow on the podcast, we're going to speak with David DeLucci, former Ole Miss player, former World Series champion, played with many different teams, including many different players, including Roy Halladay, who passed away in a tragic plane accident yesterday in Florida, I believe, is where the plane went down. David had just seen, actually, Roy really recently. So, We will talk to him tomorrow about that. So David on the show tomorrow. We'll also have a soft verbal up today with Russell Johnson and Mr. Neil McCready sitting over beside me. So good grief, still coughing.
It's mostly Russell. It's not me. I've been working. I have not been working on recruiting.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're not real well versed there compared to previous years, I feel like.
No, not this year. Yeah. It's been on the back burner.
Yeah. So we'll have
way back burner.
We'll have a soft verbal. Also you'll get a beer garden this week with one JG Tate up as well on rebelgrove.com. and always our rest of our content. There are nuggets. There are some of the things up as well. So, again, thanks to Ted DiBiase. We'll get David DeLucci tomorrow on the show, Jeffrey Wright tomorrow on the show, and then Ryan Brown on Friday as he has quite the eventful week planned as well. So that and more on the Oxford Exxon podcast. Talk to you tomorrow.